You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
I spent $40,000 on shoes?
What's the matter, Morty?
Coral, the Sphinx.
Can't you buy our whole dress?
Coral, the Sphinx.
Great gowns.
Coral,
beautiful gowns.
Fashion has changed.
Coral,
no, it hasn't.
Hi, I'm Lauren Garoni.
And I'm Chelsea Fairless.
And welcome back to another episode of the Every Outfit podcast. Chelsea, how the hell are you? I have not seen you since we last recorded, which is a little unusual.
I'm fine. I feel like nothing interesting has happened to me, though. I visited my parents. That was nice. Glad I got to spend time with my dad. And I got a cold while I was there. That sucked. And now I'm better. And now I'm back. And life goes on. And so does this podcast, for whatever reason.
Well, we did stoke the parasocial fires by dropping our joint maternity photo shoot. Or I guess it was my maternity photo shoot. You so gamely participated. And also shout out to Paul, who was okay with the announcement of our child having more to do with us than him. But we did photos with Paul.
Yeah.
Why do I keep saying we? I did photos with Paul. I just want to thank everyone. The response was so phenomenal, and there were so many women that reached out to me to assure me that my life is not over, that in some cases I might become even more myself, even more sarcastic post-child.
How lucky for me.
I don't know if you noticed in the comments, but there were a lot of Sex and the City references. There were people asking if we were going to name the baby Shayla.
No one of any gender should be named Shayla.
This is very true.
Apologies to anyone named Shayla that is listening. I'm sorry, for me, it has very strong connotations with Charlotte and, you know, I just don't really fuck with that as a baby name.
And for those who are chronically online, that has recently become a TikTok sound taken from Tyrese.
Oh my God, my Shayla!
But I did notice, I think people were genuinely asking if maybe as a nod to Miranda Hobbs, who's given us so much personally and professionally, if I would name the baby Brady. And this got me thinking that I feel like we should share the fact that my father made a baby boy nameless that he shared with me, that I then promptly shared with you and Tatiana, because I love my father dearly. It truly is the thought that counts. But this is a nightmare blunt rotation of baby names. Chelsea, if you remember this list, I'm handing it off to you.
Of course, we've been making fun of this list for months now.
Okay, you don't have to read all 40 names, but if you just want to, for our listeners, read your favorites.
My favorites? Okay. Again, sorry if anyone listening has these very extra Italian boys' names, but we are talking about Leonardo, Marcellus, Massimo. Imagine having a little boy named Massimo. Remington, Sterling. Like, they all sound like bad cologne names, you know? Thaddeus, is that how you pronounce that?
Yeah.
Zachariah. And my personal favorite, Mordecai, which is what we have been calling your unborn child for months now.
We have been calling the baby not just Mordecai, but we've shortened it to Morty as a nod to our theme song, the line from First Wives Club, "What's the matter, Morty? Can't you buy her a whole dress?"
Imagine naming your unborn child after Dan Hedaya's character in the First Wives Club. I think that would be great. Also, he's crazy for putting Hunter on this list because there's only one Hunter that we think about, and he does meth.
I was going to say my father probably put it on the list because of our mutual fondness for Hunter S. Thompson, a man who also probably did meth during his lifetime.
I will say, I think Dario is a great name. It's a nice reference to Dario Argento. Rio is a great nickname. Nothing like a three-letter situation. Also, I think Paul would appreciate that as a typographer.
Well, yeah, Rio Glover. That could be a cool name.
I'm making a case for Dario.
You forgot to mention that my father put Lorenzo on the list, which I just like giving my son because he will have his father's last name. It's like the male version of my name. Like, I'm still there somehow.
Yeah, that's really extra. What else?
Well, I went to the desert this weekend. Plus one, or shall I say a hanger-on, to my parents who go to the tennis match that's out in Indian Wells, the one where Timmy and Kylie were at the previous weekend.
People are always going to the desert to do the weirdest shit, you know? To me, that's just like a place to lay by the pool and drink cocktails.
It is an odd place to have a tennis stadium, seeing that 8 months out of the year it's 110 degrees.
Yeah, when I hear that people are going there for like a conference or a film festival or to play golf, I'm like, what?
Again, I was a hanger-on. I was generously invited to stay at a house that was in a gated community that was golf-based. It was like the PGA gated community.
So you were on the Republican side of the tracks?
Oh, we were in a community, Chell, where it wasn't just Ford F-150s. There were Ford 250s, 350s.
I don't even know what that means.
Trucks where our cars could fit inside the truck beds. They're that big. But really, I come to the desert to do one thing, and that is to go to the outlet mall as I'm heading back to Los Angeles.
Which also has a Sbarro.
It has a Sbarro.
Right by the Balenciaga store.
I just saw a clip on TikTok. Did I research this to see if it was true? No, but it seems like I missed by a day the Skims outlet.
Oh, really? There's a Skims outlet?
That's what they're telling me. And by they, I mean a random person on TikTok that I did not verify if this is true.
Have you seen the Skims store on Sunset, though? I don't think we've talked about this. No. I just drove by it today.
I drove by it today as well. It's funny because you notice that they've covered on the front of the store that it says Skims. It's just funny because it's like you don't even need to cover the sign. It's completely beige.
Yeah, it's a bulbous nude building. We know what this store is going to be. But I could not be more thrilled with the location because I have wanted Sunset Plaza to have a glow up forever. And between the Supreme store being down the street and this, it seems like this part of Sunset is really poised for a comeback.
I've been saying the same thing, mostly because it's one of the few places in Los Angeles with ample parking. But it does have some of the hooiest restaurants, establishments on that block.
And like none of the restaurants are that good, but we just go to them anyway.
And lastly, if I didn't feel that I was getting old enough, as I was on the freeway, you know, they have all the billboards for the various casinos that are in the desert. They're promoting that comedian with all the puppets or like New Kids on the Block or something. Chelsea, this time the billboard was like All American Rejects and the Ataris.
Whoa.
And I was like, oh no, we are desert casino age?
Yeah, we are desert casino age.
Anyway, that was my weekend.
Well, that sounds delightful.
I'm curious, Chelsea, did you happen to read the Vanity Fair profile with our fave Gwyneth Paltrow?
Of course, you can't not read whatever the latest Gwyneth Paltrow profile is. This one was by Michelle Ruiz. I feel like profiles of Gwyneth are like their own cottage industry within the world of New York journalism. There's a good one every single year, and this is the new one.
The timing of this is a little curious because she doesn't have anything to promote exactly. It's very clear that she is in pre-promotion for the upcoming fall release of the Josh Safdie film Marty Supreme, which given the language they're using, they're kind of setting her up to have her own Demi Moore The Substance Award season run.
For sure. And she's also continually promoting Goop. I feel like there's always a reason to profile her because of that. But yes, her return to acting, or rather her return to acting in an Oscar film, is quite noteworthy.
I appreciate you clarifying so that the Marvel-obsessed Lukes who listen to this podcast aren't like, she appeared in 7 Marvel films, actually, in the last 12 years.
You know what? This profile also reminded me of the fact that Country Strong exists. I have not thought about that in years.
Well, why would you?
Why would I? But it really took me back to a certain era of Gwyneth that has really been forgotten.
So I think what's come out of this profile is a few things, one of which are her comments about intimacy coordinators, which has proven to be, for those chronically online, a very hot button issue. She says when she was shooting Marty Supreme, which is the latest Josh Safdie film that also stars Timmy, who she seems to have a multitude of love scenes with him in this movie. She goes on to say in this article, there's now something called an intimacy coordinator, which I did not know existed. I guess when this intimacy coordinator asked if she was okay with a particular sex move, she was like, girl, I'm from the era where you get naked, you get in bed, and the camera's on. And I guess people have taken issue with the fact that later in the article, she discusses how she basically shooed the intimacy coordinator away.
Well, I get it. We need intimacy coordinators to avoid Last Tango in Paris situations, Blue is the Warmest Color situations. But I also understand how, as an actor, it might be hard to lose yourself in the scene and make it realistic if someone is getting really granular about like where someone's hand should be or whatever. I feel like an actor should be able to refuse the intimacy coordinator, but they still have to remain on set and just watch like a cuck in case something happens, in case they change their mind and want them. They're there.
Yes, as someone that has used an intimacy coordinator, they really do function no differently than a stunt choreographer. You are correct. It seems that the other reason she's doing this profile is to kind of counter some of the negative press that happened about Goop last fall because they let go of some employees.
Yeah, they laid off a bunch of people.
She was there to say they had significant growth and that 2024 was Goop's best year yet from an overall revenue perspective. And Chelsea, do you know what was the highest growth vertical for them?
What?
Our beloved Goop Kitchen, which delivered 60% growth year over year.
Goop Kitchen needs to be in every city in America. Sometimes I think, like, God, if I did move back to New York, not having Goop Kitchen or Erewhon would actually be really difficult. Sorry to sound like the most annoying LA person on the face of the earth, but I'm sorry, it's true.
I was going to clarify, and this is really the thing about Gwyneth Paltrow and all of her endeavors, is you want to make fun of it. I'm sure those that don't live in Los Angeles are kind of, you know, making your beds or driving in your cars, making fun of us being like, Goop Kitchen is good. It is good. I don't know how to explain it.
Well, also, you know how you can never just order like a piece of salmon and some rice and a little salad, but she's actually like given us that, like a normal meal.
The bone broth, not great, but...
Yeah, I don't fuck with that turmeric bone broth. But I think people get annoyed with her when she says things like, I just would not eat M&Ms in the United States. Like, I'll only eat them in Europe.
That might have replaced her previous quote where it was like, I'd rather smoke crack than have cheese out of a can.
But also, like, fair, I will eat M&Ms in the United States because I am a garbage person, but she is correct that there are things in those M&Ms that are illegal in other countries and should very much be illegal here. It's not a bad thing that she's pointing that out.
No, there's another narrative of this article which doesn't seem to be getting as much attention, which is the back third of this profile is dancing around if Gwyneth Paltrow fucks with RFK Jr. or not.
Yeah, just because they both fuck with raw milk doesn't mean she co-signs on everything he's ever said or done.
Yeah, she's not going to eat his roadkill bear meat.
Well, also, her political affiliation is discussed. She has described herself as an independent thinker.
Oof.
We know she's a Democrat, though, for the most part. She's hosting Pete Buttigieg fundraisers. She's doing all that, but she's friends with Rick Caruso, like many liberal-leaning celebrities, because there is a certain point, if you live in Montecito, where your social world is just restricted to, like, who's around. And Rick Caruso is there. He's on your same, like, holiday party Christmas circuit. So because you know him, you're like, sure, I'll endorse him. Surely he's not that bad.
And look, you want that good table at the Rosewood Miramar. Yeah, I also think, and this isn't discussed in the profile, but it's definitely something I've observed, a lot of people have observed anecdotally, is there is a wellness to MAGA pipeline. I'm not saying this is Gwyneth, but it's...
Oh, of course.
But it's in the solar system, and it's very curious.
Well, yeah, and I think that the male biohackers are very that.
I also thought it was kind of shady because in all of this language, they're like, she didn't disclose who she voted for in this election. It's like, fuck you, did you ask?
Well, see, this is the thing. People want to catch her being a Republican. We've talked about this recently. I think there is a real genuine desire for celebrities to do problematic things just so people online have an excuse to be mad at them and, like, write nasty tweets and comments about them. I think there would be a collective glee if Gwyneth Paltrow somehow outed herself as a Republican.
Sorry, my mind is just flashing to me talking shit about Meghan Markle last week. It's a thin line between having a podcast with cultural commentary and being a shit poster on X.
Yeah, but we're criticizing Meghan Markle because of the quality of the program that she created, not because of her political beliefs.
The perfect transition, Chelsea. I wanted to discuss with you the concept of celebrities and their side hustles.
I have a problem with rich people having a side hustle.
Yeah. You mean like a podcast or something?
No, this is, you're doing work. I'm saying if you sold, like, where would my line be for you? Where would I draw the line?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Like if I had a rosé.
Yeah.
You know.
So yes, Amy Poehler has a new podcast called Good Hang with Amy Poehler, which is described as, I guess, not a podcast, but a weekly video series that will offer a hilarious mix of comedy, personal stories, and not too serious conversations with guests. Like with Las Culturistas, Tina Fey just dropping just a beautiful soundbite about the current state of culture.
She's right. We are being inundated with celebrity vanity projects. And for the most part, the brands that these people are starting are not driven by innovative ideas necessarily. It's people that are starting the brands because they want to be wealthier. They want the clout that is associated with having a successful brand, like the clout that, say, George Clooney has. Or they simply realize, I can make something that is absolute shit and I will never have to work again, like Jessica Simpson's shoe line.
Yeah, that woman's nearly a billionaire.
Designing the most disgusting footwear we've ever seen, you know, all of which I'm sure is already in a landfill.
Well, it's interesting because it really is only in the last 15 or 20 years that celebrity side hustles have actually been successful. Because I feel like the original celebrity side hustle was being a restaurateur. Think of Planet Hollywood. Think of the Fashion Cafe. I know a place you visited, Chelsea.
A celebrity running a restaurant? What could go wrong?
Planet Hollywood at least made a little bit of sense, where it's like, it was off of the back of how popular the Hard Rock Cafe is.
Well, yes, same with the Fashion Cafe.
Right, but at least with celebrities, you're like, okay, it's celebrity memorabilia, and I guess, you know, actors have to eat, but it's a harder idea to get around that models were opening up a restaurant.
If a model is opening a restaurant, it should be macrobiotic. It should be old school, you know, like Suen or something.
R.I.P. Suen. I feel like the two breakthrough celebrity side hustles were beauty and then alcohol. Rihanna with Fenty Beauty, followed up by Selena Gomez with Rare Beauty, and then Casamigos. And as much as this makes my eyes roll, I guess Ryan Reynolds and Aviation Gin?
No, really?
He sold it for a boatload of money.
Imagine just sitting in front of all the gins and grabbing that bottle instead of like Hendrix or something. I'm not even a gin drinker, so I don't know what the good gin is, but...
I think part of a successful celebrity side hustle is you have to find some kind of vertical that is underrepresented.
For sure. Or something that's genuinely innovative, like to bring it back to beauty, the Kylie Jenner lip kit was innovative. The range of shades in the Fenty foundation was innovative. They genuinely brought something new to the market that should have already existed. So it makes sense that they would be rewarded for that.
However, those that come afterwards where you kind of go, was this your genuine passion or did your manager come to you with this licensing opportunity?
Oh, you can tell it's not their passion. Like, do you think that Cindy Crawford is passionate about her Raymore and Flanagan furniture?
She is an infomercial queen. That is in a different echelon.
Well, that is actually kind of the original celebrity brand.
That's true.
Like pre-beauty, pre-alcohol, it was QVC. It was Joan Rivers, the Liza Minnelli collection on QVC.
Jane Fonda's workout tapes.
Cher, of course.
So do we want to discuss some celebrity side hustles that don't work as well? Because what I think about not quite genuine celebrity brands, I can't help but think of Bella Hadid and her affiliation with Kin Euphorics, because she somehow became the founder of that brand after the product had launched, and I don't know how that works exactly.
I'm kind of fine with that, actually, because at least she identified a product that people seem to like. Like, I'm not the hugest Kin fan personally, but I know that they have an audience. And why not just buy into something fab that already exists, then try and, like, poach all the same people and make your own shittier version?
This is true.
I think that most celebrity brands are complete flops. They're not memorable. Again, they're not innovating, and these people are genuinely not passionate, or to Tina Fey's point, perhaps not qualified to even be doing this. The success for most of these brands, I think, rests on the team that is developing the products and doing the marketing. Like, I don't know if Rode, for example, is super successful because Hailey Bieber is like the most insane creative visionary. I think that there are just really good people working on that brand.
See, I can't tell you what products Rode makes, but I can tell you that I know from driving around Los Angeles, those pop-ups, very successful.
I'm surprised you don't know what products she makes. No, because all we do is hear about the peptide lip treatment and the glaze, face glaze or whatever.
Okay, I was being hyperbolic. Yes, I know there's like lip products and there's like a milky thing and the iPhone case. That's where she innovated, like Kylie Jenner, the iPhone case that you can put your lip gloss in.
Exactly.
I know people dunk on the Kylie Jenner beauty brand, but like, how insane that it took up until her to package the same color lip liner with a lipstick.
Yeah, like this isn't rocket science.
And yet somehow
Kylie Jenner is that rocket scientist.
And guess what? No brand copied her.
Well, can we talk about some actually good celebrity brands? Because I don't think that they're all trash.
Okay, but before we do, can we discuss, I think, a forgotten celebrity brand, which was Scarlett Johansson's popcorn store in Paris?
Okay, who weekly listeners have not forgotten about Yummy Pop?
She was married to a French guy. She was forced to live in Paris. There was nothing else to do but start a popcorn store.
Do they not have popcorn in France?
According to her, no. But... But now she has a pretty good skincare line. Like, the Outset has some pretty legit products. I've used them. I went through.
Really?
Yeah. The squalene moisturizer. I used it until it was empty and then forgot to rebuy it and then just got a different moisturizer. But I remember it being quite good.
Do you remember when Jessica Simpson had that body care line called Dessert? And I think it was like lotion that sprayed onto your body like whipped cream.
Not to be confused with the Cardi B whipped body shots.
Yes, don't mix up the two.
All right, what are some other good celebrity brands in your opinion?
Well, I want to shout out the OG, Paul Newman.
Oh, Newman's Own, yeah.
Newman's Own. Been buying that man's salad dressing for years. I buy his dog treats from time to time. All of the proceeds are donated to children's charities, I believe. He started this brand with the intention of using his fame and his likeness to make money for charity, which is an incredibly noble thing to do. No one would do that now.
I was going to say, and no one has followed in his footsteps.
Not one person, but it's crazy to me that I think younger generations are going to look at him like he's Chef Boyardee or Aunt Jemima or something. and not like he's the man from Cool Hand Luke.
Yeah, I think that time has already passed. They're like, he's the salad dressing guy.
Another celebrity side hustle that I support, The Row. The Row is a brand so deeply influential that Prada is knocking off their handbags. And I think that their taste level is on par with the best European designers. And I appreciate the fact that they are committed to quality, which is a thing that a lot of celebrities don't seem to care about.
They also put in...
I'm looking at you, Jessica Simpson.
They also put in the time. I mean, The Row has only recently come to this place of like being some of the most well-regarded designers. I mean, it was 10 years of kind of eating shit in the fashion press. And thankfully, because they were child stars that had Kmart fashion lines and sold their direct-to-video videos, they were able to just fund their line until it became what it is now.
Good for them. They're the best. Another celebrity side hustle I support, Amy Sedaris' decorating books.
Ooh, yeah.
Yes, these are humor books, and I don't think books should necessarily count as a celebrity side hustle because a lot of them do write books, but these are different. Like Gwyneth Paltrow, she has an interest in the domestic arts, in entertaining, in crafting. And those books were incredible. I support anything she wants to do in this sort of home realm.
But you don't support Ellen DeGeneres' home goods line?
No. Do not support that. Also, Home Court, we've talked about this before. Courtney Cox's line of cleaning products, very innovative because she decided to hire a master perfumer to formulate the scents. No one has done that before. No one's even tried to do anything like this.
And the rose scent actually smells like roses.
Yeah. Although I've switched over to the Mandarin Basil. That's my favorite one now.
Ooh, okay.
The last celebrity brand that I completely co-sign, Houseplant. Seth Rogen's line of smoking accessories. Because this appears to have been born out of a genuine passion for two things, weed and ceramics.
Two things you can get behind.
Two things I can get behind, two things that he actually seems to care about. And I think it's cool that he has made a brand that's sort of trying to appeal more to a niche design focused audience than just making a tequila or a beer or something that would just easily sell to like fans of Pineapple Express or whatever.
Right. I think what you're discussing with Home Court and Houseplant is these are products that can stand on their own without their celebrity founder. And oftentimes people actually don't know the affiliation of the actress from Friends or the guy from Pineapple Express or behind these products.
For sure. They could not have their faces out there at all. And I feel like these brands would still make sense or might make even more sense. Who knows? I have to ask because it's been a minute. How is the Every Outfit HQ coming along?
Oh, right. Yeah. For those who don't know, we are building a space above my garage that will function as our podcast studio, fulfillment center, office. It's going well. We actually just finished framing.
Well, let me know when I should get involved because I have a ton of ideas.
Okay. You want to help build the studio? Because I think the construction crew would appreciate an extra set of hands.
I detect sarcasm, but what you don't actually know is that I'm great at manual labor.
Okay.
No, I'm talking about decorating. I actually don't want to do any work in the office, but I am excited to decorate it. And I've been doing some window shopping on Etsy recently.
Ah, yes. I'm well aware of your love of Etsy. And for the record, I love Etsy too. That's why we are thrilled to announce that today's episode is actually sponsored by Etsy.
See, I feel like we should go for an 80s postmodern sort of vibe for this studio.
That's right. We've been discussing that the look is somewhere in between a 1990s public access show and Diane von Furstenberg's fabulous 1980s office.
Yeah, I feel like the colors should reflect the branding to some degree, right? I actually did find this really amazing pink postmodern couch on Etsy, which I am gatekeeping. But I feel like we could buy that and get a black rug, or we could get a black couch and get a pink rug, like one or the other.
Ooh, all All right, I'm seeing the vision.
Also, having recently bought some really fabulous 80s furniture on Etsy, I just want to emphasize how nice it is refining your search results by location. Because sometimes I like to pick things up instead of have them shipped, you know, especially with furniture. It's nice to see what's available locally. Also, what did you think of the chairs that I sent you?
Yeah, guys, Chelsea sent me an Etsy seller by the name of Handshaped Chairs. It's exactly what you're thinking. They are chairs that are shaped like gigantic hands.
I just love that making hand-shaped chairs is someone's job. I feel like I picked the wrong career path.
I feel like it would add a level of surrealism to our office that we're definitely looking for.
For sure. I love a conversation piece, and I feel like this one gives you a lot of look for your money, certainly.
Yeah, I also feel like it might inspire us to have more guests on, because the idea of friend of the show Allison Brie sitting in a hot pink gigantic hand chair is just too delicious to resist.
Also, I know we need a lot of big ticket stuff like furniture, but we also need little decorative items for this studio. And honestly, that's my favorite thing to shop for, like little trinket trays, little candles, things of that nature, because you can scratch the shopping itch without spending a ton of money. Like a candle is not the same as a couch.
Okay, lay it on me. What did you find on Etsy for us?
I found a really good candle that looks like slime, but in a chic way. And I found this really fabulous seller that makes candles that look like hyper-realistic beverages. There's a really good martini one.
Okay, but do they make a Cosmo one?
They do not. I did check. However, a lot of Etsy sellers are open to custom orders, so we could try to make that happen.
That's what I love about Etsy. All right, this whole conversation has made me really excited for the upcoming Every Outfit office. I'm actually sad that it is not built yet. So while it will be a minute before we could unveil the Every Outfit HQ, you can shop our favorite vintage and 80s inspired office items on Etsy. Chelsea's favorites will be linked in the episode description. But beyond your Etsy favorites, there's a wide array of original pieces at all price points for you, dear listener, to refresh the look of your home or office with the click of a button. Shop the Etsy app or go to Etsy.com.
So let's talk about some fashion news from most shocking to least shocking.
Okay.
I think we know what the most shocking bit of news is, which is that Demna is leaving Balenciaga and will become the new creative director of Gucci. I had heard rumors that he was leaving Balenciaga, but I could never have imagined that this is where he would have ended up. I thought Eddie Slimane was getting this job for sure.
He will not just be in charge of women's wear. This extends to menswear and accessories. It's the entire brand. According to the chief executive, Stefano Cantano, who said of Demna's installment, Gucci stands for fashion authority. This is what we want to bring back. Again, they're a leather goods company. They really don't have a ready-to-wear consciousness until Tom Ford comes on board in the 90s.
Okay, sure, but Alessandro Michele made them a major fashion player, but they fired him for being too weird, which is why I was surprised by this announcement.
I think with Demna's appointment, it does give credence to the theory that Alessandro Michele was given an ultimatum by the executives of Kering, the parent company that owns Balenciaga, Gucci, among other brands, to basically
water down his vision.
Quiet luxury-ify his vision? Hard to say.
So they then hire Sabato, who's extremely boring, too boring. And then they realize, oh, wait, we actually do need capital F fashion for this brand to work.
When Sabato De Sorno was there, revenue of Gucci plunged 23% in 2024. Not great. But we've also discussed this idea that while there was this period of seemingly infinite growth when Alessandro Michele was the designer, that's just, it's not sustainable.
Of course it's not sustainable.
And it's very clear, well, I guess my perspective on this decision is it feels like a decision made out of fear.
That to pick Demna?
Just because it's very clear that it's like, we need to bring the profits up. What is the easiest way to do that?
For sure, but it also does seem like a bit of a risky move in a certain sense. Obviously, what he's done for Balenciaga has been amazing. It's been very controversial at times. There are a lot of people that don't like Demna. There are a lot of people that are not excited about this, shall we say. I don't agree with them. I'm incredibly excited about this.
I'm intrigued. I mean, the New York Times pointed out, which I did not realize, that while Demna was at Balenciaga, revenues grew to close to $2 billion from $390 million. You cannot argue with his results. I think also what they're looking for at Gucci is a designer that is able to bring a client that comes back season after season. And you may not like what Demna does at Balenciaga. It's certainly not my personal style, but that client comes back season after season. That is a loyal customer. Don't know if they'll pop over to Gucci, but we'll see.
Well, I think he's going to tweak his look a little. Obviously, he's not going to become a completely different designer, but I wouldn't be surprised if he left the sort of black, oversized, industrial, goth streetwear look over at Balenciaga and lean more into the clothes that look like a cartoon of a rich woman. You know, the fur coats with the extreme shoulder pads and the structured handbags and that sort of stuff.
For sure. At first, I was like, I don't know why Demna would do this, but...
Well, it is a promotion. Of course he would do it.
Right, but I just thought that he had found a sweet spot at Balenciaga. And also one thing that Balenciaga offered him that I'm not sure Gucci can is the couture component.
I think it would be a missed opportunity if they didn't.
But also I realize, I think he's said all he can say with his worldview at Balenciaga. So this is a natural, like, ability to start again from a design perspective, or at least a way to evolve one's design aesthetics.
For sure. Like I said, I still think he will be making oversized clothes at Gucci. Like, I think those oversized suits are coming right over. Again, maybe not the more sort of industrial looking stuff. But I can imagine this. I can also imagine him leaning into the nastier side of the Tom Ford era, like the G-strings and stuff.
Of course.
I can imagine him latching onto that. I can imagine him doing a very sort of postmodern take on that classic Gucci jet set look and having some model come down the runway with 10,000 bags.
If I could have a request, and I know that Demna does not listen to this podcast, but if that man were to remake that Gucci bag that Carrie wore in season 2, the one that we can never identify that she's wearing at the end of Shortcomings... bestseller.
I think the bags are going to be incredible. I think that people will lose their minds. I think it will be the only bag that anybody wants. That is my prediction.
Well, the fact that Sabato De Sarno only designed Jackie bags, like, we can only go up from here in regards to bags with Gucci.
For sure. Also, I find it funny that people are like, what could this possibly look like? And I think that speaks to our collective lack of short-term memory, because in 2021, he did design a collection for Gucci with Alessandro Michele, the Hacker Project, which was so extremely influential that we see collaborations between huge luxury brands regularly now. But we did see him bring his look to Gucci, although that collection was so much, I think, about kind of bootlegging.
Yeah.
It was very cartoony. I don't think that every single piece he would make for Gucci would look like that necessarily. But I do think it's interesting that that happened.
It's very exciting. It's very interesting. There's no word on when or where his first collection will be.
Well, he still has to do a Balenciaga couture show this summer. So I don't think we're going to see anything from him for a long time. We'll get another placeholder show. But we'll see. I do find it fascinating reading people's comments about this on the internet, because I would think that someone was murdered. A lot of people hate this. A lot of people hate him. And there have been, of course, a lot of criticisms leveled at Balenciaga, but I think the most pervasive one is the idea that clothing that is often associated with the lower classes or the middle classes, like hoodies and Crocs and handbags shaped like bags of chips, can't be high fashion. That high fashion is a shoe with a red sole, or a Louis Vuitton tote bag or something like that. And I think that when people see those clothes, they feel like they're being made fun of or deceived.
Well, and there's also a group of people that still think that he's a satanic sex pest.
Well, there's that too. I think it's the idea that it's like, what's the point of spending all this money if you don't look rich?
Which one could make the point is his whole commentary with his work at Vetements and Balenciaga.
Of course. One could also make the argument that this has been around forever. I mean, this is the same exact argument that people, you know, made against Vivian Westwood and punk and deconstruction, because that's about looking poor too, right? And now every basic bitch goes to Target and buys ripped jeans. And no one thinks about it at all. And I do think that Demna is ultimately going to have that level of influence on people, whether or not they like his potato chip bags now or not.
Would you like it if it had a Gucci logo on it?
Maybe.
All right. Next up, Donatella Versace steps down as the chief creative officer at Versace, which she has had that role for almost 30 years. But she will now become the chief brand ambassador, which according to the New York Times is an honorary role involving philanthropy and red carpets. And then they say parentheses and red carpet philanthropy, which I can't tell if they're being sarcastic.
I love that for her. It actually made me really sad that the Demna announcement completely overshadowed this because it happened on the same day. And Donatella is one of the most iconic fashion designers in the world, and she deserved a day that was all about her. God damn it. But she will be succeeded by Dario Vitale, who...
Another Dario
who works at Miu Miu. Has been one of the great creative forces behind that brand. So it feels like everyone is really excited about this.
And this appointment makes sense if you know that Prada is in the process to not so secretly buy Versace from the Capri Group. I love that it's called the Capri Group. May I remind you, Chelsea, the Capri Group is actually Michael Kors' company.
Iconic.
Michael Kors purchased Versace in 2018 for $2.1 billion, but sales have only gone down in the past few years, and Prada is kind of getting Versace for a steal for only $1.64 billion.
It's actually really major that they're like, no, we're going to dress every Italian woman.
Yeah.
Because the Versace consumer is never shopping at Prada and vice versa.
No, although it does occupy the two modes I like to be in, which is sort of like nerd, but also like romantic thought.
I mean, I don't think of Versace as romantic. Thought, yes.
Look, there's two sides to me, Chell. It's nerd chic and thought. I mean, not at this present moment.
Yeah, I was about to say, no shade, but like...
I'm in glorified sweats right now.
I mean, you're literally in sweats right now.
How dare you? These are my other go-to pregnancy pants, which are the J. Crew Strauss pant. Yes, does it have an elastic waist? It does. Those are real people pants, Chell.
See, I would never think you would want to shop at Versace based on this outfit.
I might with Dario Vitale at the head of Versace.
Well, we should want to shop at Versace. There's no reason why we shouldn't want to shop there.
I agree with you. It has all of the makings to be the next It Girl brand. That's what he did with Miu Miu.
We all want to see Versace succeed.
And I know that Donatella's stepping down was overshadowed by Demna, but I do think the Prada group does know what they're doing because the Gucci client might go over to a Dario Vitale designed Versace. They might feel a little sartorially homeless with Demna's Gucci.
I don't know. I think he's going to make people look sexy. I think there's going to be a component that is that Tom Ford look.
See, we're even overshadowing Donatella when talking about this news.
I know, this poor bitch. God. In the least shocking fashion news of the week, Jonathan Anderson is officially out at Loewe.
But Chelsea, where will he go?
The Dior announcement is imminent. Yes. It has not happened yet. I have heard that there has been some drama at Dior with the exit of Maria Grazia. So TBD on when that is happening, but it is happening.
They are also, it's worth noting, both LVMH brands. While he's going to a different house, most likely it is still under the same larger corporation.
And like Demna, he's essentially getting a promotion, a huge promotion, the biggest promotion that you can get in this world, short of Chanel, I guess.
And, you know, I look forward to no longer shitting on Dior collections. Guys, you think I like being this hateful about Dior? We're all rooting for you, Dior.
I know there's this series of books about Dior that just came out. It's like they sit next to each other on the shelf. It's multiple volumes and they're devoted to all of the different designers. And it just made me think like, fuck, the history, the legacy is unparalleled. And imagine if Dior was a leader in fashion once again. Imagine what that would do.
Hard for me to imagine.
But they're smart to bring in Jonathan Anderson, although it's hard for me to imagine this because I feel like with Loewe, even though it's a heritage brand, he kind of just started from scratch and did whatever the fuck he wanted. He did this sort of bohemian Ibiza look for the first half of that 10 years that he was there, and then sort of pivoted into the more surreal stuff. And obviously J.W. Anderson is exactly what he wants to do. It's not based on anything. It's not referencing anything. So for him to come into a job like this, I'm curious.
I think we've seen, because of just the speed of the designer musical chairs, and we discussed this last week with Patrick, of like, you can kind of do anything within these heritage brands. I mean, you can really make it your own. It will be interesting to see how he honors the design heritage of Dior.
Yeah, I don't think you can do anything with Dior. I think you have to do certain things. You have to make people want to buy the bags and the jackets and those classic pieces. I feel like you do actually have to uphold something. You can't just completely start from scratch.
I also think that the Loewe customer that he's developed is more likely to come over as a new Dior customer than, again, sorry, the Balenciaga customer to Gucci.
Yeah.
But we'll have to wait and see. We don't know when any of these collections are debuting.
What we do know is that this has to be the end for Natalie Portman as Miss Dior.
Oh my goodness gracious.
I think the first thing that they will do is rectify the situation. They need new brand ambassadors. They need a completely different vibe. I don't know if Taylor Russell is still under contract with Loewe, but she would make a great Miss Dior.
I mean, Natalie Portman started as Miss Dior before she got married. This woman got married, had two kids, won an Oscar, got divorced, has children, I assume in junior high now, still Miss Dior.
She's on her deathbed, still Miss Dior.
You know what? At this point, yeah, I think we need to cradle to the grave Natalie Portman as Miss Dior.
It's a lifetime appointment to be Miss Dior.
Speaking of people who could be Miss Dior, we forgot to mention last week Gigi Hadid on the cover of American Vogue.
Right.
Models, they're back on the cover of Vogue.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine. I'm pretty much indifferent towards it. It's Annie Leibovitz, it's Moody, it's another Vogue shoot that is inspired by the 20s and Edward Steichen and all of that sort of shit. I wouldn't maybe choose that theme for Gigi necessarily.
I agree with you. I did enjoy, because remember that era in the 2010s where they would do an editorial with a hot male actor and then have a model be in the editorial with them?
Mm-hmm.
I like the reverse of this, which is you have two up-and-coming male actors in the editorial with Gigi. You had Mike Feist from Challengers, and then Lewis Pullman, who's the son of Bill Pullman, soon to be in a Marvel film, rumored to be dating Kaia Gerber. Her eye for talent, unprecedented.
Truly. She should become a casting agent if this whole modeling thing doesn't work out. One thing I did really like about this, though, is that there were a few dresses and hats that were actually from the 1920s. They were from Timeless Vixen, which is one of the better vintage stores in Los Angeles. And I thought that was cool because you don't see a lot of vintage in magazines, even in photo shoots that are inspired by past eras.
That's interesting. Now, Chelsea, I did go ahead and read the article. I don't know if you did.
No. No shade to Gigi. I just didn't get around to it.
It was pretty unremarkable. I think mostly because I don't particularly care for her brand, Guest in Residence. Her cashmere brand. We forgot to mention that with celebrity side hustles.
Oh, I didn't know she had one. What is it called?
Guest in Residence, I believe. Okay. Nor do I care for comments about her relationship with Bradley Cooper. But I was struck by this one quote, where it discusses that Donatella Versace was an early champion. She was one of the first, as Hadid puts it, to be like, your athletic volleyball body is the sexiest thing I've ever seen, even though that wasn't really the opinion at the time in fashion. And something in the back of my brain was like, volleyball body is very specific. Where have I heard that before? Then it all clicked into place, which on The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, Yolanda Hadid was a cast member for several seasons, pre-modeling fame of Bella and Gigi, and they are on the show. And you saw firsthand that it is very clear that Yolanda gave Gigi and Bella their love of fashion and the idea that they could be models, but also gave them raging disordered eating problems and complexes about their body, as personified in this clip.
Volleyball is a very masculine sport. Modeling is a very feminine thing.
I know.
And that means sometimes we have to give up things that we love to do. But, you know, you have to make a choice.
Modeling is my job. Volleyball is my sport.
So their bodies are big and bulky, and I mean, they eat like men.
I love how they're talking about Gigi as if she's some sort of diesel dyke or something. Just like... I'm just stomping around like a lumberjack.
By the way, this is a 15, 16-year-old Gigi Hadid who, yes, is playing volleyball, but, like, is maybe a size 2?
Wow. She's butch.
It's clear, like, Gigi's own blonde mother fucked her up, and she's like, you know what? Donatella healed so much because she was like, I love your volleyball body.
Okay, can we talk about the accompanying video, though?
Okay, this was crazy. All I could think about was just the production budget to do the editorial that's in the magazine that is so completely different than the video that they shot.
Yeah, I got whiplash from that.
They could have easily done a Hairspray-inspired editorial.
I know, and I would have preferred that. Although I feel like this video, which was directed by Bardio Zainali, who's made a lot of really great video content for Vogue, this felt like an extension of the Marc Jacobs issue. This felt like, oh, remember that issue we had with like all of the queer and trans people and everyone was just really happy? Let's do more of that.
It's funny because the Gigi editorial in Vogue really harkens back to kind of the last great era of Vogue where they actually had a budget. And it's very clear now everything is about the video content. And I was like, well, clearly the video is more important than the editorial. And then I looked at the numbers and it came out 8 days ago and it hasn't cracked 100,000 views. So I'm like, what was the purpose of this?
That's sad.
For those who haven't seen the video, we should explain.
Okay. It is essentially a music video. It is not a fashion film. It is a music video, and Gigi is covering You Can't Stop the Beat from Hairspray. It features special appearances by Cole Escola, Laverne Cox, Marc Jacobs, of course. And it was fun. I'm glad they did it. But I don't know if casting Gigi in the role of Tracy Turnblad makes a whole lot of sense. Like, that's fat phobia right there.
It absolutely doesn't, because I don't know if you saw, there was an explanation, I think in the YouTube caption, that was like, Vogue cover star Gigi Hadid, who played Amber Von Tussle at just 9 years old in a production of Hairspray. It's like, okay, then have her be that.
Well, she doesn't have a big number. That's the whole thing. I don't actually think it's fat phobic, by the way, although I do think that they actively tried to make it not fat phobic, which is why they cut the line in Cole Escola's solo. They were playing the Harvey Fierstein role about eating the Christmas ham. I'm sorry, Hairspray people will understand this. They cut the ham eating lyric. They don't want anyone talking shit.
This is what happens when you've already done 73 questions, potentially twice. It's like, this man has no more questions for Gigi, actually. We're going to have to think of something else.
It did make me really happy to see Cole Escola, though, in the Harvey Fierstein divine role. And I love that because they're such a tiny person, they put them in this big, puffy, sculptural Marc Jacobs dress that evokes the look of a heavier woman.
I'm starting to buy into your theory. I think this was just an edit that wasn't done in time for the Marc Jacobs issue.
Yeah, it's very that. Also, I feel like we might need to get Hairspray back on Broadway so Laverne Cox can do the Motormouth Maybell role, because that really worked. That worked too well. She'd been waiting her whole life for that.
I don't even like musicals, and I would go see that.
Yeah.
All right. I think that...
Well, you won't be seeing it at the Kennedy Center anytime soon.
Oh, God.
That much we know.
People come here to get away from politics, as I've been told. All right. I think we've said it all about fashion. Shall we discuss an incredibly depressing prestige limited series you made me watch over the weekend?
I made you watch. Did you not like it? Did it not make you feel good about having a child?
All right. We're talking, of course, about the Netflix limited series that has taken over the platform, Adolescence, which is a real joy to anyone that's about to have a boy. Oh boy. No, I mean, it's just a bummer. It's an incredibly well done series, nor do I particularly think that the son that I will have will fall into the manosphere.
He better not. We're just gonna have to like brainwash him with that Vogue Hairspray video, Clockwork Orange style.
Somehow, I think Morty being surrounded by his lesbian aunt, I doubt he's going to become a devotee of Andrew Tate.
Well, hopefully he'll go to a better school than that kid went to.
So for those who have not seen this series, it is about a young boy who murders a girl. I don't think that's a spoiler alert. Who is influenced by the likes of Andrew Tate, who I was surprised he got name checked in the series. I thought it was going to be inspired by this thing going on in online, and he gets a shout out, which I think is giving him too much energy, but whatever.
Yeah, but I think what I really like about the show, it subverts our expectations on so many fronts, right? Because when you watch the first episode, you think, I know what I'm in for. This is a police procedural sort of situation. And throughout this four-part series, we are going to be peeling back the layers of the onion, figuring out, getting to the heart of like why this young kid would commit such a violent and heinous crime. But they abandon that immediately. They're like, nope, he did it.
I did,
which is so much more interesting.
I did see people surprised that there wasn't a twist ending, which I think speaks to our brain brokenness of ripped from the headlines, true crime, fictionalized prestige series that we've been inundated with over the last 5 years.
Sure, it's also just breaking away from basic television conventions. Even the fact that they resist the urge to give us an explanation for this that might make sense, right? Like, they don't do the Law & Order SVU type thing where they're like, okay, well, he did murder this chick, but he was molested by his soccer coach, or he has been diagnosed as a sociopath, or he has multiple personalities and the bad one committed this crime. You know? They don't give us any justification for it that could make it make sense for us. It's just kind of a vague thing where it's like, well, he was bullied and he was exposed to stuff online, but like they don't even really get granular about that, which I think is fascinating.
I mean, all we get is that he had a bad reaction to a series of passive-aggressive emojis that were left on an Instagram comment. So for those who haven't seen the series, the other, I would say, astonishing thing about it is not just the ripped from the headlines story. It's not based on a specific true story, but Stephen Graham, who is the star of the show, co-created it, is a co-writer on it. And he was taken by these news stories about teenagers stabbing each other. And obviously the influence of incel culture and manosphere titans like Andrew Tate. So each episode, there's only 4 episodes, gotta love British television series. They are all hour-long one-shot episodes. I personally think there are hidden cuts, but it is an unceasing,
unending tracking shot.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's shocking. And it's crazy because it feels so naturalistic when you know that it is the opposite. It is the most choreographed, contrived, rehearsed thing that you could imagine. But because I think the episodes are filmed in a single take, it does feel truer to our experience of just walking around the world and observing things. And it forces us to be very present with what's going on with the characters. And I feel like it's especially different today when we're used to watching TV shows where there's like the A plot, the B plot, the C plot. Also with shows like Severance, we're also doing flashbacks and things like that that really take you out of the moment. And this was just so unrelenting.
The performances are so on point. All I could think about is like, what if you're the person that messes up a line?
I know.
it's too much pressure.
Well, also Stephen Graham, who plays the dad. One of the most incredible cinematic depictions of a grieving father that I think we've ever had. It reminds me of, you know, watching like In the Bedroom or Ordinary People or movies like that.
For sure. And for those who haven't seen the series, it's not too much of a spoiler, but you know, the first episode is the kid is arrested, he goes to the police station. The second episode, I guess that's what subverted my expectations, is you're like, okay, we're going to be following him through the trial, through, you know, the aftermath, how that affects the parents of the murdered girl, who, like, they make this point in the series, and then they kind of also do the thing that the female detective's commenting on in the second episode, which is like, we've forgotten the girl. Like, the girl's name isn't even mentioned. She's talking about the press and how everyone focuses on the perpetrator.
Right.
And how the boy almost gets more fame. So I was like, okay, so the fourth episode is going to be about the grieving parents of this murdered girl. It's like, nope.
And that's basically what they did with the Jeffrey Dahmer monster series.
Right. It's all through his perspective.
Well, then at the end, it switches to be more about the victims.
Right.
But no, they did not do that.
And then the second episode is at the school. The third episode, which is, I don't know, there's not even a best episode. They all kind of build off of each other. But to your point of like, they don't explore why this boy did this. I mean, he's off. This is a boy that has rage issues, which you see in the third episode.
He's off, but what's so unsettling about it, and what was unsettling to his court-appointed psychologist, was the fact that he kind of switches back between being this full-blown psycho and being this, like, kid that has to be told to eat his cereal.
Well, and at times he's sort of flirting with her as well.
Again, they don't make him out to be 100% undeniably sociopathic. This movie reminded me of Gus Van Sant's Elephant, in the sense that, you know, when that came out, that was about the then burgeoning epidemic of school shootings, but similarly does not offer a satisfying explanation as to the motives of the two shooters.
I feel like every generation, or certainly every 10 years, there's a movie that is supposed to like shock the shit out of parents of like, what's going on with today's youth? And I feel like in the 80s, that was River's Edge. In the 90s, that was Kids. In the 2000s, you know, pick your poison, Elephant, 13. And this feels just like, well, because we don't really make movies like this anymore. It's evolved from movies to television of like, look what's going on with today's youth.
Yeah, and Euphoria has also been that show more recently, although it's obviously less centered around violence than this show is. Yeah, between this and White Lotus, big week for dads having nervous breakdowns.
Well, I guess, yeah, British actors, Jason Isaacs with a southern accent and Stephen Graham with whatever his accent was, which I immediately had to put the subtitles on.
White Lotus?
No. I'm talking about adolescence.
Parker Posey, was that hard for you to understand? Oh, I always keep the subtitles on. I'm ashamed of it. But honestly, it's not my fault. It's because there's no regulations as to the sound levels on one network to another between the ads and the actual show. And I can't deal with that shit.
I'm purely talking about their Liverpoolian accent. And there is a moment in the final episode where it is the boy's family and focusing on the sort of aftermath from their perspective, where I had the subtitles on, I was actively watching it, reading the subtitles, still couldn't understand what they were saying.
Oh yeah, they could have been speaking Russian for all I know. But good for the British people. What a wonderful show. I'm excited. What?
I mean, it is a very competent show. It is depressing.
It's depressing, but hey, at least it's only 4 episodes.
This is true, but it does feel like there was some meeting at Netflix post Baby Reindeer where they were like, these Americans love depressing British dramas. What else do we got?
Well, they figured it out, and I think this is going to be a big award season contender. But who do you nominate, the kid or the dad? Both of them? They're both equally leads.
And where does Jason Isaacs fit into all of this? So Chelsea, I think we've said it all, but I was going through some hotline calls and this got my attention and I feel like we should address this now.
Hi, you two. Very thrilled for you that there is a new way of putting commercials into the non-Patreon feed. Love that Lauren doesn't have to record so much. However, the commercials that I keep getting during your podcast are for a very, very evangelical church that apparently is local to me. So I don't know how these ads are getting chosen, but I have to say I am not their target demographic. Thanks. Bye.
Guys, Lauren has a baby on the way. And if we have to run ads for mega churches, so be it.
No, no.
I'm joking.
Thank you to this fuckhead for bringing this to our attention. We were unaware of this.
Yeah, when I first heard this call, I immediately called Lauren and was like, what the fuck? How did this happen?
So to take you behind the scenes of every outfit, we have recently switched ad networks. Thank you, caller, for being like, thank God Lauren doesn't have to do ads anymore. I will soon be doing ads again. They're figuring out getting our host ad reads going. But in the meantime, they told us about this thing called dynamically placed ads. And that is what you guys are hearing. We have no control over this. Also, I do go back and listen to our episodes, and here in Los Angeles, we were not getting those ads. So it is targeted seemingly by location.
Although, thank God we realized that we can go to the back end of our ad network's website and uncheck the boxes that say that we will do ads for religious organizations. We also turned off the gambling ones and the tobacco ones. So sorry if you guys have been getting ads for like scary vapes or something.
Yeah, sorry.
We're sorry. This is a formal apology to anyone that had to hear that. We would never endorse a religious organization for a multitude of reasons, but especially not a mega church.
But this feels like a good time to hype up our VIP channel. I do understand we are seemingly hurtling towards a recession, and, you know, potentially giving us $5 a month is a luxury, and that's completely fine. Keep listening to us on the main feed. But I just do want to say that our Patreon, you have access to our weekly episodes ad-free, and you get them a little bit earlier, plus 2 additional episodes a month. Our next VIP episode, which should be dropping Tuesday, is a deep dive on the Kim Cattrall, Sarah Jessica Parker feud. You can also get these additional episodes on Apple subscriptions, but we personally feel Patreon is the superior experience. You can comment, we comment back. We can add you to close friends on Instagram stories. At the $10 level and up, we send you quarterly stickers.
Well, also Patreon, just generally speaking, is better to creators. Creators get a higher percentage of the money that you pay every month. So we also love it for that reason. Although, of course, Apple has found another way to fuck us. And by us, I mean you and me, Lauren, as well as our listeners.
Yeah. So a note about those who hear this and are thinking about joining our Patreon. The Apple App Store has started applying a 30% App Store fee to all new memberships purchased in the Patreon iOS app. Those thinking of joining, we encourage you to join via the desktop Patreon website. You can then take that RSS feed, put it into your Spotify, listen on that app.
Well, you can use the app still. You just can't make the initial purchase through the app.
Yes.
Just to clarify. Also, if you've purchased it through the app in the past, like before they rolled this out, which was, what, a month ago or something?
Yeah.
You are not affected. You will not be paid more if you've already signed up. It's just people who are signing up now through the app. And Patreon has given creators the option to absorb the fee, which is both considerate and fucked up. I can't really figure out how I feel about it. I don't think that people should do it, or I don't think that people on Patreon should lose 30% of their income to Apple. So that is why we are imploring you guys to just use a desktop computer. Anywho.
But thank you, listener, for bringing this to our attention. We are sorry to you guys who have had to hear these kind of ads. Who knows what kind of ads are on this episode?
One can only imagine.
This is especially funny that we're addressing this because we did do, as you guys heard, a sponsored Etsy ad that we believe in. Chelsea did curate an incredible collection.
I do believe in Etsy. Absolutely.
All right, guys, we will see you next week. It will be a Sex and the City rewatch episode. What episode are we gonna do?
Even we don't know.
All right, guys, see you next week.
Bye.